is here, Reality On Demand. With loads of binge-worthy box sets from the start. Over 3,000 episodes, that's a lot of reality TV. Watch tons of episodes same day as the US. On every screen. Go to heyu.com or download the app to get all your favourite reality shows for $3.99 a month. Hey You, Reality On Demand.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to The Show For You, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello and welcome once again to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast. This week, coming after an Arizona Cardinals victory, finally. It feels like it's been a while. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, one of the sites that belongs to the USA Today, NFL Wire. And my co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the co-hosts for the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, how are you on this Tuesday evening that we are recording?
Oh, it's good, Jess. We had a busy night running kids around today and got back in time to do a little podcast because we needed a podcast this week because there's actually something good to talk about.
Right. This is not a doom and gloom podcast. I mean, we actually have some positive things to talk about. The Cardinals get a victory. They defeat the Washington Redskins 31-23 at home. Looking a lot like a 2015 team. Looking a lot like their 2015 wins. And they get out of their losing streak. They knock off a team that was ahead of them. In fact, the Washington Redskins were in fact the number six seed in the number two wild card spot. Knock them off out of that position right now. And the Cardinals are a little bit on the move. The NFC is playing out kind of the way the Cardinals need it. Teams are losing, and they're starting to. They got their win, so things are still kind of available. So what we're going to talk about tonight. Or to, you know, as you're listening, it's going to probably be today or another day. But we're going to kind of react to what we saw about the game. We're going to the good, the concerns. We're going to talk about the gutsy, no risk and no biscuit play calls late in the game, and David Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald and the contributions they got from lots of people. We're going to go into as well. We're going to talk about the playoff scenarios that the Cardinals still have because heck, they're not eliminated. So why not keep talking about it and what needs to happen? That makes it fun. We'll talk a little bit about a roster move that, you know, has been long awaited, but it isn't quite the roster move fans have been waiting for. And then we'll look ahead to the Miami Dolphins as they will travel. The Cardinals will travel to Miami this coming weekend for their last early game. Maybe this one will have a better ending. But as Bruce Arians calls it, they're already in the playoffs. The Cardinals are. So they just got to keep winning to keep moving on. But before we start, I'd like to tell you about FanEssentials.net, let you know that this episode is brought to you by FanEssentials.net. For the sports fan, if you like getting Cardinals gear or any NFL team gear or even other sports they have, FanEssentials.net is the place for you. They will send you every month. You will get your team gear right at your doorstep. It's great for you, and it makes an even better gift for us, the sportsman that you know. So head on over to FanEssentials.net and check it out. They have plans that start at $34.99 a month, and as a Rise Up Sea Red podcast, decide to give it a test run, I've got a code for you. If you use the promo code Sea Red, you'll get 15% off your first month. So check it out, FanEssentials.net, for all the essentials you need. So let's go ahead and come on and start with this lovely game. Now, on the surface, Seth, what did you expect going into the game, and how did it play out, like, your feelings during the game? Was this a game that you felt that they were going to win, and did you feel like during the game that they were going to win?
You know, the emotions went back and forth on this. It was difficult to really kind of make the decision on this game, what they were going to to do, because at times, you know, offensively, especially to open the game, it looked like a dominant team. It was, I said on Twitter, it was the best drive they've had all season long. I mean, it was physical. It was, you know, meticulous. It was methodical, and it really just continued to wind the clock, wear down the Redskins. And then they kind of just crapped the bed after that offensively. But defensively, they were that hungry, you know, fast, aggressive defense that we've seen. They had some bend but don't break in them, gave up 2 field goals. And then, you know, they flipped it and were able to get a field goal before half, going 10-6. And then the emotions changed right out of the gate. And I'd love to know what the feeling was as soon as they hit that deep pass to DeSean Jackson, just blitzed Tyvon Branch on a go route. And, I mean, it was almost that feeling of, here we go. Like, the defense had done so much for the offense to start the game, and then they find a way to give up one big play, and then you thought, okay, well, they've stopped them the last couple of times, you know, as they got down there. They'll stop them this time. And then, you know, Washington just went and punched them in the mouth. The first run, I think it was a 6-yard run, and it took about 9 guys to tackle Robert Kelly. And then, you know, Kirk Cousins just burrowed his way into the end zone. And you just kind of got that feeling of, okay, like, is this, you know, if the Cardinals can't respond offensively on this next drive, they're probably done. And they responded. And so that was, you know, that was great to see. It was something we haven't seen all season long. And then you kind of realize, okay, this is more of what we expected from this team this year. They rose above some adversity. You know, obviously I think Calais Campbell made the play of the game. A lot of people think JJ Nelson did, but I thought Calais Campbell's sack fumble was just something that this offense needed so badly to get back into a rhythm. And then from there, you know, it just continued to snowball into positive things. Even giving up points, you know, they were able to hold the Skins to a field goal and then force the interception on the last drive. Like, you just saw things that we have not seen all in one game all season, especially since basically Tampa Bay.
Basically, yes. And for me, it was – and I was fortunate enough to I believed this game was going to go like this. I was on the radio, on the little radio spot that I have on 1060 AM on Sunday morning, and this game was a typical 2015 win. They got out to a quick lead. In fact, they got, you know, they had the 2-score lead. They let them back in the game. They make a big play. The game goes back and forth, and then they make the big play late in the game and hold them at the. That was, I think, I felt like 4 or 5 of their wins last season, especially during the win streak they had in the second half of the season, went just like that. They'd jump ahead, the team would claw back into it, they'd make plays, and win the game late. And that's the team we saw all year, even against subpar teams. Now, this Washington team is a quality team, especially offensively. So it was very good in so many ways. It was very good in so many ways to see what the Cardinals were able to do, because they looked like a good offensive team, which they really did. They were playing a Washington Redskins defense that's kind of been, you know, subpar. We'll call them subpar. If you want to, like, they're a layup line. They give up a ton of yards. So the Cardinals should have been able to move the ball, and they did. But they were supposed to also be able to move the ball really well against Atlanta, and they did it. They had mistakes. And offensively, they were solid. They were running the ball really well. They got, in addition to the massive production that they got from both David Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald, they also got big contributions elsewhere. It wasn't just now. They got big plays. They had key plays from pretty much everyone. So they had Michael Floyd with the key touchdown. Jermaine Gresham was huge, and his season is really rounding out to being quite a nice season now late in the year. J.J. Nelson with the touchdown. They were getting key contributions from everyone. And so it wasn't just the Larry David show. Like they had the, you know, he had David Johnson as 175 yards and his two touchdowns. He 9 catches, 91 yards. He had Fitz with another 10 receptions. But Gresham became the third threat with the 5 catches that he had and, you know, playing very physically. Michael Floyd came up with the big play and J.J. Nelson came up with the big play. And then defensively, they did well early and then did just enough. And I want to talk about one of the things later because we're going to talk about the whole risky play that they made down the stretch. But the Cardinals defense wasn't great, but they were good enough. If we look at the possessions that Washington had, they really did nothing against that Washington offense after the first quarter. It became that Calais Campbell strip sack was critical. That was their only stop. In fact, defensively, there were basically two moments that I thought were critical. One, the strip sack. And then two, after they got that lead 24-20, the next drive, they held them to a field goal. That was so important. Because then it's set up to be able to play from ahead instead of from playing from behind. So the defense did just enough. And when they held Washington to that field goal to keep it a 1-point game, it was at that point I said, yeah, the Cardinals got this. When they were able to keep them from scoring another touchdown, and this is how their drives went after the first quarter was field goal, okay, then they had the 1-play kneel down. Touchdown, the fumble, touchdown, field goal, and then the very last, they had the interception late in the game. It felt like the Baltimore game in a way, but only against a better team like last year. And so it was a vintage game. You saw the team that this team was supposed to be all season. And that's the type of game it should have been with two playoff contending teams, or in this case, it should have been two already playoff seeded teams duking it out against each other with a solid Cardinals offense and a very good Washington offense and a good Cardinals defense. And so this was exactly what you would expect to see, only the circumstances were different. But it's good because moving forward, I mean, it's setting you up to sound rather prophetic. Hopefully you're just wrong at the end. You're on mute still if you're talking.
Oh, of course I am.
It's been a while. Good work.
Yeah. You look at it and you watch the game and you see just key instances of what this team is now in terms of offense. And, I still don't know what they are defensively. I truthfully don't, because they just look so dominant at times. And Patrick Peterson was completely – I mean, he just wiped out every receiver he covered. He wasn't covering DeSean Jackson early, and, you know, they go deep to DeSean Jackson once, and they bump him over, and all of a sudden you don't hear from DeSean Jackson the rest of the game. Obviously, same thing with Pierre Garçon until they moved Peterson off Garçon. Like, you look at that. You look at Calais Campbell and the work he's done over, especially like the last 5 games, and just how good he's been. But offensively, I thought we got an idea of who they are. They are starting to understand that you can't trust anyone not named David Johnson or Larry Fitzgerald, and now Jermaine Gresham. And by trust, I mean like consistently trust, right? Like you can throw that deep pass to J.J. Nelson, and you know it's a coin flip. Like it's not a high percentage play. You can throw that touchdown to Michael Floyd, and you know it's a coin flip. You go back and watch that touchdown catch. He almost dropped that. Like, that was just – it's just you can't trust anyone but those three guys, but they still have guys that can make a difference. And, you know, obviously John Brown coming out that he's only played 20 snaps a game, that's terrible, that's awful, but J.J. Nelson still has some ability. Michael Floyd still has some usefulness. And I think Bruce Arians kind of finally figured out the reality of what this team is as opposed to what he wanted it to be or what it was.
Yes, exactly. And the kind of the post-game comments that we heard is that Carson Palmer talked about the game plan, and they, you know, looking at some of the Pro Football Focus numbers, and one of the things I kind of like to see is, you know, Carson Palmer had 46 pass attempts. He threw the ball a ton. Only 11 of those were not considered short passes, and that's very uncharacteristic of the Cardinals. Now, they still took their shots. I mean, they didn't have their six shots that, you know, that BA likes to use. They only had three really deep throws, but they only threw, that's the thing, they only had eight intermediate passes, and maybe it was just for this game itself, because they knew with their basically a makeshift right side of their offensive line, because you've got you've got a tackle playing right guard, so a guy who was a tackle
allegedly,
a guy who was a tackle who did decently at left guard, then played left tackle. Now he's playing right guard, and a guy no one's even heard of, a guy, you know, an Ulrich. What's an Ulrich? And now, granted, they got DJ on the left side, so the left side of the offensive line looks solid, but the right side against a very good defensive front with Washington, especially when it comes to the pass rush. They've got really good edge players. Really, really good edge players. And the game plan was, okay, we're going to get the ball to David Johnson, Larry Fitzgerald. We're going to throw a lot of short passes. And it was noticeable. They were getting the ball out quickly.
I mean, there was a ton of tunnel screens. I mean,
yes,
just tunneling. I mean, it was just they're extensions of the run game. It's not even a, you know, it's nothing but an extension of the run game. And it's amazing to see that evolution, but then it's also disheartening, maybe. I mean, you look at it and go, okay, why didn't we realize this 4 games ago? 3 games?
And like, it was probably this. It was all about Carson Palmer's protection, because BA even said we had guys open down the field all night. They just weren't able to make the throws, because if they were going to take those deep drops and knowing the physical, especially on the right side, the physical limitations of Wetzel and John, that Palmer's going to get himself killed. And so they mitigated that. I think they have really good trust on the left side of the offensive line. And with how the right side looks, with as many questions as there were about the right side earlier in the season, imagine now. There were questions when it was Evan Mathis and DJ Humphreys. Now it's a John Wetzel and an Ulrich John. So you got a pretzel and a guy that why is his first name Ulrich? He's got a last name for a first name and a first name for a last name.
Have you asked him that?
No. What's an Ulrich?
But, I mean, you look at it and you just see – like, and I know we're going to get to it later, but you just see what this team is. And there's basically not a lot after Evan Mathis went out. There's really – I mean, is the offensive line that different? DJ Humphreys has been playing well to above average at left tackle. They're still stronger running the ball on the left side than the right side. Ulrich John is a complete work in progress at right tackle, and John Wetzel's a fill-in at right guard. So, like I said, like you put Valdir back at left tackle and Humphreys back at right tackle, it's basically the same offensive line. It's just I think what it comes down to with Bruce Arians is it has to be beat into him via his quarterback taking a beating before he'll say, okay, I have to relent. You know, and in reality, it's cost him one job already. I mean, when you look back at Pittsburgh, that was
the knock.
That was the knock. Like, quit getting Ben Roethlisberger murdered. So, you know, you look at the entirety of it, and you applaud the change. You do, because it makes this offense, and it opens up that deep passing game so much better. But that's when you stop and just think, okay, if they have implemented this change, you know, in maybe the San Francisco game when Palmer didn't play, and then started to, you know, really implement it with Palmer there, like, how does the rest of the season turn out? Because now they look like an offense that can have continued success and not just rely on those, you know, biscuit type plays to make their offense great. They have something that can be consistent outside of David Johnson getting the ball.
And yes, and the threat of, and I think, you know, maybe it's the Jermaine Gresham effect over the last couple of weeks, because now he's had five catches each of the past 2 weeks. His emergence, or perhaps it was the emergence of, okay, we've got to get someone else the ball. Floyd's not getting it done. JJ's a toss-up. Smoke, he can't get on the field. And so it was, they're left with, well, who else are we going to? Got Jermaine Gresham, you know, this guy that had 50 plus catches for five straight years. and now he's looking, he's playing the way they're playing. He's playing like that's a legitimate option. And he's that third guy. And when you get that third threat, it really changes things offensively. But let's talk about this. Let's talk about David Johnson, because what can we say about him? I mean, he picks up another 175 yards of offense. He's scores another two touchdowns, nine catches for 91 yards, and that's following his 100, his eight catch 103 yard performance in Atlanta. You know, he's not only rushing the ball for a lot of yards, and he ran the ball extremely well, 84 yards and a touchdown, but now he's also getting receiver type numbers, and you know, the numbers we now look at, there are exactly two players in NFL history who have at least 1,000 yards rushing and 700 receiving yards through 12 games. Marshall Faulk, a Hall of Famer, and David Johnson. Johnson is flirting at this point now with the potential of hitting the 1,000-yard mark for both rushing and receiving, which would put him as the third in NFL history. You got Roger Craig. You got Marshall Faulk. And if David Johnson joins that group, that's pretty amazing. Now, what is there anything left that we can say about this guy?
No, there's really not. And, you know, it wasn't like temper expectations, but it was like the question was it fair to put those expectations on a second-year player, right? Like,
right.
Nobody doubted that he could do it. It was just a question of, is it really, you know, fair to expect him to do it in his second season in the NFL.
And if we look at the history of the Cardinals, they've never, ever had a standout back that followed up a promising rookie campaign with a really good second year. Exactly. Every single time, it's been a disappointment.
So you just, you know, you look at it and you say, okay, like, what was this fair? Like, was this And now he's on pace, you know, for 1,340 yards rushing and a cool 940 yards receiving. You know, like 20, just under 2,300 total yards of offense.
Those are the numbers Andre Ellington were supposed to get in 2014.
I know, right?
Remember when Andre Ellington was a good running back?
Yeah. And you know, he's got 15 touchdowns on the season. Again, is it fair to expect him to keep that pace? Probably not. But is he going to end up with, you know, 20 total touchdowns on the season? That's amazing.
It's reasonable to think too in his second year, and I, you know, he hasn't gotten the, you know, who's the best running back in the NFL? He doesn't. I mean, he gets a vote as the best running back in the NFL when we should be saying, is there a better player in all of football? I mean, it's crazy to ask, but who
else? And that's where I'm at, like, with it. I don't care if you don't call him the best running back. Whatever. I mean, it's semantics, but whatever. But he's been the best all-around football player in the NFL this year.
It's not even homerish.
I mean, you can say Ezekiel Elliott, from a pure running back standpoint, has been better. But you could probably say LeSean McCoy's been, again, from a pure running back standpoint, been better. But nobody in the NFL carries their team offensively like David Johnson has to. And that's the reality at this point, is he has to. You take David Johnson off the Cardinals, they don't win against Washington. Do they have 4 wins on the season?
I don't – geez. Especially – and I say that jokingly, but the back that Andre Ellington used to be, he's just not that guy anymore.
No,
as a running back, he's call me crazy. I totally see him. Like the Cardinals looking at him, okay, we're going to make you a receiver, because that's really all they try to do with him anymore. His rushing attempts now are like the Percy Jackson, Percy Harvin, the Percy Harvin. He's in motion. They hand the ball off on the jet sweep. Instead of a traditional line it back 7 yards deep, he's always lined up as a receiver now. And it's almost like he's not a running back anymore.
No, he's not. And he's not a good running back, even if he was, right?
The guy that was averaging 5.5 yards a carry, that guy doesn't exist anymore. He's a negative two waiting to happen. Imagine if he were the starting running back, if he were the feature back with this offense, how dreadful this offense would look right now.
Exactly. So, you look at it and it's just one of those things. Like, I honestly think if the Cardinals weren't drafting 12th overall at this point, we'd be having a more serious conversation about him as the MVP of the league. But the reality is, it's impossible for a team that's 2 games out. I mean, technically it's 1.5, but it's basically 2 games out of a playoff spot. It's impossible to put him in that conversation when you have a running back from the number one team in the NFL, a quarterback from the number one team in the NFL, the, top quarterback in the AFC is on the number one team in the AFC, and then the second best quarterback in the AFC is on the number 2 team in the AFC, and they're both 11-2 or 10-2. So it's like, to expect a guy that's playing on a team that's 5-6-1 because their kicker missed 2 kicks and their coach couldn't figure out that that he was the offense until it was hopefully not too late, but right now too late. Like, that's unfortunate for David Johnson. Because here's the other thing that's crazy. When you look at this season and you look at the stats from this season and the rushing leaders, you look at it, there's 3 guys with over 1,000 yards. Melvin Gordon's literally right behind it at, I think, like 993. I'll pull it up real quick. Hold on 1 second. 992, sorry. But when you look at it, how many more carries do these other guys get? Like, that's the thing. You look at what these other guys are getting in terms of being able to carry the ball more. David Johnson's still only carrying the ball 19 times a game. Like, Now, he's getting way more touches a game, which is, you know, obviously important, but he's only carrying the ball 19 times a game. I saw somebody tweet out, oh, Theo Reddick's the second best receiving running back in the NFL behind that guy from the Steelers. What? And I'm like, whoa. I mean, if you want to say Le'Veon Bell's the best,
okay,
I don't agree with that, but, you know, whatever. But don't say that somebody. So, yeah, I mean, you look at it, David Johnson's fifth in rushing attempts. Oh, no, sixth. Sorry, I had to go way down there to find somebody else. So David Johnson's sixth in the NFL in rushing attempts per game. I mean, you're talking about behind Ezekiel Elliott. Okay, that makes sense. DeMarco Murray, Melvin Gordon, LeGarrette Blount, and Le'Veon Bell. And Lamar Miller is just right behind him. So it's one of those things, like, it's an uncommon usage because he's getting, you know, six catches a game plus the 19 carries a game. So he's still getting his 25 touches a game, but that load is also increased as the season's gone along. And he's, you know, doing more with it.
Well, and then you look at some of the, I saw this tweet from, I think it was from Bleacher Report, and it was a little video featuring David Johnson. Oh my gosh. This was amazing. David Johnson's having a better season at receiver than your favorite receiver in most cases. He has 704. I mean, he's 33rd in the league of all of football in receiving yards. So he's ahead of guys. He's ahead of DeAndre Hopkins. He's ahead of Deshaun Jackson. He's ahead of Dez Bryant. Now, there's been injuries, so there's obviously some of these numbers are skewed because there's been injuries and games missed. But you talk about just yardage. Dez Bryant, Cole Beasley, I mean, DeAndre Hopkins, these are big names in the NFL. David Johnson's outdoing that. He has 64 receptions, which puts him – let's see, where is it? It puts him 19th in the league. He's tied with Emmanuel Sanders. He has more receptions than Pierre Garçon or Jordan Reed or Brandon Cooks, Jamison Crowder, and DeAndre Hopkins. He's out receiving these players. In first down percentage, his first. We're gonna have to go down some crazy list here because now we're talking about all we have to go with. So he has a more first downs as a receiver. Where is he? David Johnson, number 36. He's got 34 of his 64 receptions go for first downs. That's more than Brandon Cooks. That's more than Anquan Boldin. That's more than Jamison Crowder. I mean, more than Dez Bryant. His percentage of first downs is 53.1%. I mean, he's just – then you go with the touchdowns as well. So he's also got – I mean, he's just – his year is just nothing we've ever seen before. It's just insane. As a running back, in a second-year player, a guy that teams passed over – 85 times in the NFL draft. And now we're looking at he's probably the best player in football. I mean, that's not crazy talk. This isn't just, you know, Carson Palmer's the best quarterback. Last year, Carson Palmer was having a great year. Carson Palmer's the MVP of the league. And that was mostly, you know, it was legitimate. But look at this. There really isn't another better player in the NFL right now.
No, there's not, and that's the reality, and that's what makes the season fun, but disappointing. Like, and I hate saying disappointing, but it's what makes it disappointing because
it is. It is.
Did you waste a potentially all-time great season from a running back? That's a hard question to ask. And it's definitely one that, you know, people like you and me, probably not too many others, but you and me will write about it at the end of the season. Like, did the Cardinals just waste one of the greatest seasons by running back in NFL history?
That's becoming a theme. Wasted season, you know, 2014, wasted season. So how about Larry Fitzgerald? And now Larry Fitzgerald, at, you know, 80 years old, literally legend, he leads the NFL in receptions. He's tied with Antonio Brown with 88 catches. He's on pace for 117 receptions. And he's in third place all time. This is something incredible.
It is, and it's, again, like, it was the perfect chance at an ending, right, for his career. But, yes. But now you assume, you know, we might be wrong, you assume they're going to extend that at least one more year, right? Like this can't be the end this season. Barring a 2008 like run, if they're able to get into the playoffs, this can't be the end. Like, they can't go out on this note. So the gang will be back one more year and you know, to do it all again and do it better. It's fascinating to watch Fitz play receiver and then go watch all the other Cardinals wide receivers. And it really is. And I've harped on this a million times. You know, Jess has written about it when he was with Revenge of the Birds and now with Cards Wire. We've talked about it on this podcast ad nauseum. But if you have the ability to watch the All-22 footage, do so. And just watch Larry Fitzgerald work routes. And then go watch Michael Floyd or J.J. Nelson or these other wide receivers work their routes. And you'll understand why Larry Fitzgerald gets, you know, what is that, 9 catches a game? No, 7 catches a game. You'll understand why he gets 10 targets and 7 catches a game. Because he's the only one that consistently understands how to win. He's the only one that consistently wins short, medium, and long. And you put the ball anywhere within his vicinity, and he's the only one that you can consistently rely on to make a catch. And it's just – it's amazing to see, but it's also so disheartening and frustrating that none of these young guys – and we can take John Brown out of it at this point. We don't know, just based on the fact that he's not going to play more than 20 snaps a game, we don't know if he's a guy that they can rely on ever again.
Right. He's now playing the J.J. Nelson role. What we have right. J.J. Nelson doing this year.
And so now all of a sudden, like, I don't know if you read it today, but SB Nation's Dan Kadar, I don't know how they pronounce his name. From Mocking the Draft, did his mock draft, and he mocked John Ross, wide receiver out of Washington, to the Arizona Cardinals. One, Jess and I have had this conversation. I don't know if Bruce Arians will draft a wide receiver in the first round. I just don't think that's an Arians-based philosophy. But two, how bad is it that that's where the Cardinals are with their wide receiver corps? Like, jeez. Literally every publication came into this season – every football outpost came into the season, including Cards Wire and Revenge of the Birds, with the thought and written down that the Cardinals wide receiver group was top 3 in the NFL.
Oh yeah.
And easy. Now you're talking about having to, you know, draft somebody in the first round that can make an immediate impact because the only reliable player they have is Larry Fitzgerald. And again, this isn't a shot at Larry. It's fantastic. That's so awesome that Larry has continued to be great into his 30s. But it's so frustrating that that's where you're at based on what the expectations were coming into this year.
Yes. You know, That's been perhaps the biggest disappointment or biggest mystery of the year is like, how in the world did this happen? How in the world did this happen with the receivers? But there was something that everyone's been talking about, and this is that, look, we haven't gotten to it yet. This is now the time to talk about. It's at the end of this game, the end of the Redskins game. This no risk it, no biscuit, the 4th and 1 on their own 34. They decide to go for it instead of punting the ball away. They're up by 1 at the time. They go for it. Conventional wisdom says punt it 100% of the time. I mean, was Arian stupid? I mean, the result says he was a genius, but really, was he stupid?
No, I mean, I talked about this afterwards. I didn't really think it was that gutsy of a call. Maybe I'm crazy, but you're thinking to yourself, all right, David Johnson's basically been the best player on the field in this game. The left side of your offensive line is fantastic at run blocking. And so you look at it and you go, okay, well, this is a time to pull back and kind of, or not pull back, but, you know, kind of ride this team and see what they're made of. And I, you know, based on their personnel and everything, like, I wasn't thinking to myself, oh, wow, this is a ballsy call. But, now it's everybody's talking about how ballsy it is. It's, you know, maybe it was ballsy. So
and at the moment, for me, it was, oh, but I wrote about this yesterday on Monday. And, you know, if you look at it, it's kind of taking the same train of thought as you. It wasn't as risky as you thought, because take a look at the option. Because, one, it wasn't a full 1 yard.
It was like, what's about half a foot?
Yeah, it was.
Or a foot and a half, I mean.
Right. It was maybe half a yard, maybe. Because David Johnson, he almost got the first down the previous play. So here's the situation. The Cardinals are up by 1. There's 3-plus minutes left in the game. And you either punt the ball away. And here's why it's not really a risky call. It's because, what's the bigger risk? Running the ball with the best running back in the NFL behind their best run blocking areas, including who Mike Iupati is still one of the best one-on-one run blockers in the NFL, to pick up half a yard. Or, on the other hand, have Drew Butler punt it and expect a defense to keep the Redskins within, you know, on a drive of less than 40 yards, which they hadn't done, with the exception of the strip sack. Every single drive outside of the first quarter went at least 40 yards. So, you know, and I broke it down like this. If you can expect, so if let's just assume a 40-yard net punt from Drew Butler, which, by the way, can we ever assume a 40-yard net punt from Drew Butler?
No, let's go with his career average.
With 35.
Yeah, 33.1 yards.
And so they're kicking from the 34. They get the ball at the 40. But let's say the 40-yard line. They hadn't stopped. You know, all they need to do, because Dustin Hopkins had just hit the front field goal from 53 yards and he'd been nailed it. So really all that at that point, they need to pick up 25 yards. The Cardinals hadn't stopped them for less than 40 in any drive except for the strip sack drive. So what was a bigger risk? Giving up the ball to David Johnson or having Drew punt it and a defense stop the Washington offense, which they hadn't really stopped in the second half? And so I said, that was not much of a risk at all. Now, if we want to go on beyond that point, once you pick up the first down, well, heck, you've got the best running back in football. Give him the football. And then they kept passing the ball. So I said, what's your take on that? I mean, ultimately, it worked. And I understand why Bruce Arians, because that's what Bruce Arians has done ever since he got here. That's why they were throwing the ball against Detroit when they were up like 40-7, or when they were up on – they always get some big passing touchdown. They did that all last year, and it happened like on at least on 3 different occasions where they got a breakaway touchdown late on a pass play in a game that – what in the world were you throwing still for?
Yeah, and that's what – I mean – I thought the J.J. Nelson touchdown was a ballsier thing.
Yeah.
Like, than the run. I thought the run made sense. I mean, you're in a battle. Worst case scenario, there's what, 4 minutes left in the game?
Right, I think around 4 minutes. 3.5 or so, yeah. Something like that.
So you had 2 timeouts in 3.5 minutes. The worst case scenario is you get stopped. You play good defense, hold them to a field goal. Hell, you even give up a touchdown. You probably still have 2 minutes and 2 timeouts left, or the 2-minute warning and 2 timeouts left if it's a quick thing. So, I mean, but then the J.J. Nelson one, now that was ballsy to me. Like, and it wasn't ballsy in the sense of like, oh, I can't believe he went for a touchdown. It was ballsy in the sense of, and I know it was 2nd and 5 or whatever, so it was probably the best down to do that, but it was ballsy in the sense that you threw into double coverage to a 5'9", 127-pound wide receiver, and you didn't even get the ball out far enough, so he kind of had to come back to it. Like, that was the ballsy part, is that it just – and meanwhile, Larry Fitzgerald was standing wide open about the, what, 20-yard line? I mean, just nobody within 5 yards of him in any direction. But, you know, it worked out. And that's the play I thought was ballsier. Not because they threw it, not because he took a shot or anything. Just the design of the play, who they went with, and the fact that they did it in a situation where they were controlling the ball, running it, and getting the ball out quick in extensions of the run game like we talked about earlier. And it, to make that your one deep completion over 20 yards, I mean, that's a ballsy call, and it worked out well.
And it was with Nelson in there, who wasn't even supposed to be in the game. It was supposed to be Michael Floyd who came out. He wasn't feeling all that well, and Nelson makes the big play. You know, this was, if there ever was a Bruce Arians win, this was the case. Going for it on 4th down, they get the deep ball touchdown, and then defensively they with big blitzes down the stretch. Concerns. I mean, let's kind of close the book on this game with some concerns. Obviously, for me, the concern continues to be, one, the punter, which we're going to talk about in a second. So, but you know, you have Chandler Catanzaro miss another field goal. I mean, that's a 53-yarder, but he's hit it from 60. So you're not going to kill him for that. But the defense, I mean, the defense started good, started well, started strong. But once again, kind of struggled. I mean, they did well enough. And against that particular team, you're okay with it because of the sheer numbers that the Washington offense have been putting up. But, you know, with this number one defense, you still come away hoping, oh, can they get a stop? And you shouldn't ever question, if you have the number one ranked defense, you should never be wondering, can they get a stop? Because this team, you do wonder.
You do, completely. Like, you do wonder if they're able to find a way to close the deal. And, you know, they weren't able to against Atlanta at all. I thought they did against Minnesota, and the offense and special teams really failed them. But in the end, they really weren't able to, because they still gave up a late touchdown to Minnesota. So, you know, that's the thing, is a defense is – it's funny. You look at the Minnesota game. You look at the New England game. You look at, obviously, like the Seattle game. A defense can play extremely well for, you know, 55 minutes and play poorly for 5 minutes, and they're going to get blamed for the loss, when in reality it was the fact that the offense didn't do enough to keep them, you know, to keep pace in those 55 minutes. But that's the life of a defense. When you're great, or when you're expected to be great, you're expected to be able to get stops. And I think that's the reality of this team, is they get a lot of stops early. And we saw it against Washington. I mean, 6 points in the first half. And then, you know, they gave up 17 in the second. Like, that's more where the issue is than the fact they gave up 23 points in the game, right? Like, you're okay if it's reversed. You're okay if they give up, you know, 17 in the first half, and then they shut them down in the second half and give up six. But the fact that it's six in the first half and then 17 in the second half, it goes back to something we've talked about James Betcher quite a bit. Is he making the right adjustments at halftime? Based on the last 3 weeks, and again, I don't lay the Minnesota loss at the feet of the defense, but again, they couldn't get a stop late. They struggled in this game in the second half to consistently get stops outside of the Calais Campbell sack fumble. Is it a scheming thing? Is it a coaching thing? Because if it's a continual thing happening, then you would expect to see some personnel changes or something of that nature. But everything's the same every week, right?
It seems to be. And, you know, this game, they became more of the bend but don't break defense. This season has been different. We've seen a Cardinals team be great in against points and not quite so great with yards. So they've been a bend but don't break defense. This year, outside of, okay, well, we'll look at the New England game. We'll look at this game. But pretty much they're either a don't bend defense that breaks based on their points. So they're either going to stop you with like a three and out, or they're going to give up a big play, or what's going to happen is that the offense will put them in a bad situation where they give up a big touchdown, but it's not a huge amount of yards because they got the ball on the Cardinals side of the 50.
But again, that's the same thing. I mean, again, you don't like to lay it at the feet of the defense. I mean, for instance, you know, go back to the Seattle game. The defense didn't allow them across the 50-yard line literally the entire game. The offense and special teams allowed them to get past the 50-yard line at the end of the game, and the defense couldn't do enough. They got that sack, and they had them in third and like 20, and then they picked – or it was like third and 23, and then they picked up 13 yards, and then it was a 40-yard field goal that Hauschka had to kick instead of, you know, a 53-yarder. That's the type of little stuff in a season that ends up costing you games. And is it fair to lay that at the defense? No, not at all. But in situations like that, you need your defense to do something great. You need your defense to do something extraordinary. We see defenses like Seattle, obviously, Denver last year, KC this year, for instance, in the Atlanta game. I mean, did KC's defense have a good game against Atlanta? No.
No, but they gave up critical plays. Eric Berry, oh my gosh.
They made the play that mattered the most. And that's where I think the disconnect is this year. Is that
and the Cardinals got the one play. It just wasn't, you know, late in the game. It wasn't super late in the game.
No, but I thought it was important because
so
Washington came out and scored, right? They came out and scored with ease. The Cardinals came back and had to punt quickly. This could have been sideways quick. You figure Washington was up 13-10.
It was the missed field goal on that one.
Was that the missed field goal?
Yeah.
Okay. So the missed field goal, it could have gotten sideways real quick after that.
Yes.
And Calais Campbell,
defense responded.
The defensive leader, came out and made a play that, you know, perhaps saved the season. And that's what you don't see enough from the Arizona Cardinals this year on defense. Like you said, statistically, really solid. But in plays that matter, and maybe that's harsh, but in plays that matter, right?
Right. They are still 5-11. They still give up 5-11 on third down. So they still complete. They still converted on almost 50% of their third downs, and that was mostly. And that was mostly a case of the second half. In fact, let me pull up, because they were one in the first half. Washington was 1 of 5 on third down in the first half, and they finished 5 of 11. So after that, they finished 4 of 6 in the second half.
It goes back to what we just said. Is it a coaching issue, or is it a player issue? And quite honestly,
player issues are coaching issues.
Exactly. Like if it's a player issue, then make a change, because there haven't been any changes made. So if it is a player issue, make a change so we can, you know, we can see something different and changing. We haven't seen that at all. And so that's where the question comes in, right? Like, okay, what is this? Like, what's going on? Why aren't you guys, you know, it's like that meme that you see where the guy's poking the animal, and you say, "And stay and do stuff." Like that's what you're waiting for every week. Hey, do stuff. Like, stop just laying there. So it's just one of those things. Like, you're waiting, and it. I don't know. It's just been a frustrating. So yeah, I think that's the one concern you have with the defense. Offensively, we haven't really seen it enough to be concerned or excited, I don't think. I mean, what do you think?
It's still inconsistent. It's just too inconsistent.
Well, and it's too fresh. We don't know yet.
If we can see the same sort of performance this next week and the week to follow, if they could string the 2-3 weeks together looking like that offensively, then we're like, okay. Then they've got a chance, and then maybe heading into Seattle. Maybe heading into Seattle, they've got a shot.
And that's what – I mean, that's what you want, right? I mean, you just want a shot. You want Seattle to matter. You want that Seattle game to matter.
But you want more than that. You want it to matter, and you want them to win.
Well, you want them to win, but, like, you don't want to go up there – knowing that it doesn't matter, because we've seen what happens with Arizona Cardinals teams in Seattle when it doesn't matter.
They just get killed.
So that's what you want to see.
So let's turn the page. Next up on Rise Up Sea Red, where we're done talking about the actual game, we're going to talk about a couple of things. We're going to talk about a punter move that's not really a move yet, and playoffs, and then the Miami Dolphins. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. Cardinals made a move at punter, but they really didn't make a move at punter, if that makes any sense. Drew Butler, not very good again during the game. It's finally getting attention. Steve Keim says he's definitely not happy with the way that Butler's been playing. They brought in a guy, Matt Weil, a guy that we saw with the Falcons, who stepped in for Matt Bosher when he was hurt for the Falcons. Boomed a couple of, you know, punted a 59-yarder, a 57-yarder, did kickoffs. The Cardinals brought him in, and then they weren't quite gutsy enough to just sign him. They signed him to the practice squad. So what's with that?
I just think it's – I don't know. Like, you talked about it a little bit. They don't have to cut anybody to bring him into a tryout. I get that. I don't know if you were saying it in jest either, because you mentioned not having to cut another draft pick. I mean, let's just cut them all at this point, right? None of them play, so.
I don't need Cole Toner. Come on.
But, you know, you look at it, and I get that there needs to be camaraderie between the kicker and the holder. I get that. I really, really do. But you can't keep putting your defense in a position to have to defend a short field 2 to 3 times a game because of bad punts.
Right.
And it happens 2 to 3 times a game.
It's maddening. And the love affair that this coaching staff has with Drew Butler, and I will be the first, I am loathe to call for replacing a player on the roster. That's a man's job. It's a man's livelihood. So I'm loath to say cut him. But a punter is not something – I mean, when you have my soapbox this year has been Andre Ellington as kick returner. That didn't cut him from the team. Like, don't ever put Andre back there to return kicks, please. Never. Don't. Just don't. But I'm not saying cut Andre. Drew Butler, why? I don't – I mean – clearly, it's more than just punts. And yes, he's their emergency kicker. He's the holder. And in this sense, Kent Summers tweeted out a little bit later on Tuesday, which makes this make him a little bit more sense. Weil has never been a holder, which seems weird. He's never been a holder before. So in this sense, okay, it kind of makes sense. You allow him to see, can he hold? Can you rely on him? And perhaps do you leave him there, at least for now, to provide competition for Butler, especially since they really believe in him. But at least while we know he can kick, because he's been a kicker before, so you can't use that excuse.
Right.
But here's the other thing. Drew, I'm sure Drew Stanton at some point has held, right? He's been a holder at some point, because it's how recent? Because I always remember that it was always a backup quarterback was the holder. That was always used to be the thing. And now I don't remember how long it's been, but it's become the punter is the holder, but he always used to be the backup quarterback. Drew Stanton's held for punts for kicks. Hasn't he at some point in his life?
You would think so. I just like,
but maybe not. Cause he was a starter in college and things
but here's
like
the other thing, right? So like you need that camaraderie. Like that was Kent's thing or whatever, you need that trust or whatever. Yeah. Whatever Kent said, it was very enlightening, and I'm not making light of it at all. But here's the other thing. Your kicker hasn't exactly been good either. So why are we catering to a kicker that hasn't – like if this has been who's Adam Vinatieri this year – you know, and made 43 in a row. Okay.
You don't mess with that.
Yeah, I get that. Like that's a strong point. But Chandler Catanzaro hasn't exactly endeared himself to guys or to the team this year, to the fans this year especially. So why are we protecting him? Like why are we saying, well, you know, Chandler can't. You know, we got to make sure it works with Chandler. I just thought that was funny. So that was just me, though.
Yes. So we've got two punters on the roster again. Too bad the Cardinals couldn't have thought of bringing in a punter before that they could put on the practice squad instead of cutting Marquis Christian. That might have been a good idea.
Yeah, they could use a safety right now.
No. Come on.
Well, I chuckled, and you never chuckle because of when somebody goes down, but I chuckled because Tony Jefferson and DJ Swearinger both went down for a play, just one play, but a play in the game. And my dad turned to me and goes, oh, good thing we don't have Marquis Christian anymore. And I just chuckled at that because it's like, yeah.
Because they didn't need him.
Yeah, so, you know, and honestly, they didn't end up needing him, but it was one of those things that it's one of those things you forget about, right? Like, oh, yeah, they had another player this year that could have probably maybe made an impact. So, anyways, yeah, whatever.
So let's talk about the playoffs. The Cardinals now, the NFC was, for the most part, agreeable. The NFC was almost completely agreeable to the Cardinals' needs this past weekend. They improved to 5-6-1. They were the 12th seed. The Saints lost and the Eagles lost. And now the Cardinals are in the 10th spot. However, they did not get help from the Packers or the Buccaneers. Because the Buccaneers are now in the playoffs, which doesn't make any sense because we killed them. Right?
This is just, it's one of those years. It just doesn't, nothing makes sense.
It doesn't make sense in the NFC. But here's the thing. Obviously, there's nothing that the Cardinals can do this week to be in the playoffs, to actually put themselves in the wild card. But for the most part, the mantra is what Bruce Arians said, hey, we're already in the playoffs. Because they are. Because if they lose, they're done. They win. If they keep winning, it looks really favorable that they do make the playoffs. Because if they keep winning and they end up 9-6-1, they're likely going to be ahead of Green Bay. They're likely going to be ahead of Minnesota. They're going to be ahead of Washington. And they're going to be ahead of Tampa Bay. Now, they're going to end up being a number two wild card, and they're going to have to play. They're going to have to travel to Detroit or travel to Atlanta or travel to Tampa Bay.
Or
however that.
Or if Detroit wins out, and the Cardinals win out, they're going to travel to Seattle.
No, I don't want that to happen.
But think about that. I mean, Detroit's lost four games. Theoretically, if Arizona is the only team to beat Seattle going forward, and
right.
Detroit wins out, again, theoretically, Detroit
they'd be 12-4.
Yeah, versus 11-4-1.
Yes.
And you're going to get an Arizona-Seattle rematch. And what would be more poetic to that?
Oh, jeez.
But, yeah, I mean, you look at it, they're going to have to travel no matter what. Like you said, it's going to be Detroit, possibly Seattle, Atlanta, or Tampa. They're going to have to go to one of those games. Clearly, this season you're going to rank Tampa as your first choice. I would probably say Atlanta your second choice, but maybe it's Detroit. Obviously, you want to play Seattle last in that instance. So
yeah, and truthfully, wouldn't you even rather face Dallas than Seattle? Probably.
Oh, definitely, especially in the playoffs. I mean, because it's and this isn't a shot at Dallas by any means, but would you rather face?
But they're running out two rookies as their offensive leaders.
Exactly. Would you rather face playoff hardened Seattle or baby face Dallas? Now Dallas has to cut their teeth at some time, and they're going to do that this year. But wouldn't you rather get them early than late? Like, that's just, I mean, it's not going to happen. Like, I don't see any way Dallas loses their next four games to drop out of that top two seed. But you never know, because they actually have to play Detroit, or they have to play the New York Giants. Then they play, I think, Tampa Bay, and then Detroit. So they play three playoff teams right now in a row. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe they lose three games in a row. I don't think it happens. They could lose to New York this week. In fact, I think they probably will lose to New York this week because it's in New York. But I don't know if then they go to Tampa and lose and then – play Detroit and lose. Like, I just don't see that type of fall happening. But yeah, I mean, Seattle's probably the last team you want to see in the playoffs, especially in Seattle. But
especially if you already beat them in Seattle, how impossible would that be to beat them twice in Seattle in the same year?
Yeah, to get them, yeah, to get them again in Seattle, like, whew, that's asking a lot. But, yeah, I mean, you have to at least look at it and go – and you look at the overall – you know, I'm going to pull up the schedules real quick because I don't want to screw too much of this up. But all these teams have to play each other still, right? Like,
yeah.
Tampa Bay has a bunch of good teams left on their schedule. They still have to play Atlanta again. I mean, let's see here. They got the Saints twice. Oh, no, they don't play – they have to play Atlanta again. Did they play Atlanta twice already? They must have played them early in the season then. Yeah. So they got the Saints twice, the Cowboys, and Carolina. And I was wrong. The Cowboys game is in Dallas. So – and that's on – the 18th, so that's on Sunday Night Football in Dallas.
That's right.
So that got flexed. So, I mean, that's – I mean, can you really expect them to win that game? So there's two losses in there, because one of the Saints games is in New Orleans, obviously. And then the Panthers are still going to be playing for pride at that point. You look at Minnesota, they still have a bunch of games that are difficult. You know, I don't think that they're – even though they beat the Cardinals, I don't think that they're – they're going to win this weekend because they play in Jacksonville, but then they get the Colts, and then they have to travel to Green Bay. So again, you're talking about a big game. The Cardinals, the way it lined up, worked for them to suck this year. Let's just be honest. Like, the way everything lined up sucked or worked for the Cardinals to not be a very good football team this year, because nobody outside of Dallas and maybe Seattle, and Seattle just lost to Tampa Bay. Then they, you know, run roughshod over Carolina, but nobody outside of Dallas and Seattle, you look at and go, I don't want to play them. Like, everybody else, you're like, all right, I'll take. And maybe that's us as the fans overlooking the Detroit Lions and what they've done this year. But let's be honest, like, nobody else, you don't look at anybody else and go, right?
Exactly. And just this, the NFL's weird. The NFL's weird. The NFC is extremely weird this year. And I'm going to go back to the point. I am going to, of course, remind everyone that I wrote off the Cardinals. I said their season was over after their loss in Carolina. When they lost in Carolina, that told me everything that we needed to know about this team. They're still in it. So they could do it. And we saw. And so I'm still a Cardinals fan, so I'm still going to root for them. So let's turn our attention to, for this final segment, let's turn our attention to the Miami game. So they basically, we know the Cardinals, essentially at this point, they have to win out. If they even lose one game, then the best they're going to be is 8-7-1. And based on the teams ahead of them, that's not going to get them in. What's going to get them in is winning 9 games and having that tie instead of a loss. And that will get them into the playoffs, but they have no margin of error. So let's look at the Miami team, a Miami team that had won 6 straight, but then got their fannies handed to them by a Baltimore Ravens team that, are they good? I don't know. They certainly looked the part. Miami has some tough things what Miami does well is not what the Cardinals defend well, because the Cardinals are fantastic against the pass, and they've had their issues against the run, especially on the road. And they're going to face Jay Ajayi. They're going to face a very, very good pass rusher on the edge, as in Cameron Wake. And, you know, arguably, you know, among the very best interior linemen in football, and in Ndamukong Suh. What can we see from the Cardinals in Miami on another early start?
I think the first thing we have to see is that you have to see them control the game. They have to control the tempo of the game. And quite honestly, as much as I've, you know, berated the passing game, I think they have to make this up-tempo. They cannot let Jay Ajayi, who has been a revelation this season after last season, you know, and then the early season debacle, they cannot let Jay Ajayi dictate the pace of this game.
However, he's run for all the yards. He's run for all the yards. But you look on the other side of the ball is that they are atrocious against the run. So
give the ball to David Johnson. What I think that means is they have to get this into a high-scoring game. They don't necessarily have to throw the ball all over the field, but they have to make it a high-scoring game. They cannot let this get into a fist fight, because that's what the Dolphins are built to do. They're built to fight you. They have a power running back. You know, honestly, I look at Jay Ajayi, and what I worry about for Jay Ajayi as a kind of a career is he's going to be a back that runs for like 3 or 4 seasons, he's done because he doesn't avoid contact whatsoever. I mean, whatsoever. But they're a smash mouth, punch you in the face football team, and that's who they are. And they also
they're on the other side of the ball, but they are a layup line defensively.
They are. But they also have a talented pass rushing group. That's the other thing. So you need to be able to get the ball out quick. I think you need to see that kind of that balance that you saw last game. You know, you're never going to get a 50-50 split with the Bruce Arians run team. But I think if you're closer to, you know, 55-45, you're going to have a better chance, and you're going to be able to dictate the pace of the game, and you're going to keep it from being that street fight that allows JHI to get, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21 carries. You look at what the Ravens did to them this week. They blitzed them early. And I don't mean like actually went out and blitzed them. I mean, they went out and got up. They got on the board early, and it completely collapsed what the Dolphins wanted to do, because all of a sudden they get JHI going for over 5 yards a carry, but they're down by 3 touchdowns. And it's like, well, we got to abandon that because we can't afford to continue to run the football. And so they get, you know, they get lit up. And so you want to force Ryan Tannehill to beat you. That's what it really boils down to. So however you have to go about that on offense, that needs to be the focus on the defense, is make Ryan Tannehill beat you. Because I can promise you this, and I know the 49ers held him to 2.5 yards a carry, but I can promise you this, they're not going to stop feeding JHI. He got 18 carries against the 49ers, averaging 2.5 yards a carry. It's like the anti-David Johnson. Like if the run game's not working, we're still going to run JHI into this wall. You look at his big games, he had 25 carries against Pittsburgh, 29 carries against Buffalo, 24 carries against the New York Jets, 19 carries against San Diego, only 16 carries, but he almost averaged 5 yards per carry in their win over the Rams, and then, like I said, 18 for 45. So during their 6-game win streak, yes, the Miami Dolphins went on a 6-game win streak this year when they were 1-3 or 1-4 at the time. Yeah, 1-4 at the time, I believe.
And they're still a negative 23 in point differential at right, 7-5. So they are, I mean, if there's ever a team that you look off and look at, and they're a mirage. They are a mirage of a team. But they're, if you look at, these are the Rams without as good a defense. And if you can keep them, if they can stay in the game, they will dogfight you.
Well, and the thing is, they have a lot of talent on offense. I just don't know if they're held back by Ryan Tannehill or if they're held back. I don't know what they're held back by. But Jarvis Landry's, you know, going to be the closest thing we see to Larry Fitzgerald. Now, obviously, I'm talking about now Fitz as opposed to back in the day Fitz. But I don't know if you saw the tweet from Mike Jarecki, but Jarvis Landry leads or is the NFL leader in receptions in the first 3 years of his career.
Oh, wow.
Of, like, all time. Not, like, now, but, like, all time. 269 catches in the first 3 years of his career. He's going to get, I mean, barring injury, he's going to end up with 300 catches over his first 3 seasons. Like, he's maybe not. Maybe that's a little too much. 31 this year to get to 300. It's going to be tight. It's going to be right around there. But he's just like Fitz. Again, the Bruce Arians Fitz. You look at him, 9 yards per catch as a rookie, 10.5 yards per catch last year, 10, just under 11 yards per catch this year. He's not a guy that's going to eat you up down the field. He's a guy that's just going to methodically beat you up. And that's what they are as a team, and that's what you have to avoid. You have to make them have to score quickly and often. And if you can't, if you can't do that, like you said,
look at Dicey.
You know, well, and you put it well. They're similar. They're very similar then to the Los Angeles Rams that have given the Cardinals fits in a lot of games in the Bruce Arians era.
So are we gonna stick to the story then that the Cardinals are going to win this week and continue on the narrative of making that Seattle game critical? I think so. I think they started well, so they looked like poop in Buffalo. They really looked, they showed promise but fell apart in Minnesota. They started fast and were poop in Atlanta. I think this is the game where they are okay, and it's not going to be pretty. I'm not predicting a blowout. I don't think they're going to blitz them, but I think they're going to hold on for a win in Miami this weekend.
And that's what they need. Let's be honest. They need to show up to an early game and not get their face punched and find a way to respond. And that's, you know, I'm with you. I think they win. I would have been much more confident though, if they would have lost this, if the Dolphins wouldn't have just gotten blitzed by the Ravens. I mean, they got pummeled. It was one of those games that you go, ugh. Like, if you go back and watch it, like, you're just like, oh, I can't believe that happened. But I still think the Cardinals win. You and I were talking about it before the show. Outside of Indomitian's completely shutting down David Johnson, which he has the ability to do, I don't see a way that they stop this Cardinals offense. Now, we've said that before. This is something we've said. And we've got to see this team put it together more than one time, because you and I have given them the benefit of the doubt. And maybe we've given them the benefit of the doubt too much. And that's why they're where they are, because they're not that good, but we continue to give them the benefit of the doubt that they are, and we're going to continue to do it. You and I are going to pick them to win this week. Kevin Nogle from Finsiders is going to appreciate that, and I don't see them losing this game, so hopefully they aren't on the wrong end of a blitzing this weekend.
Correct. So that'll wrap it up for this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. You can find us pretty much anywhere on the internet. If you look, we're on iTunes, we're on Stitcher Radio, we're on Blog Talk Radio. You can find us on Google Play as well. On social media, we're on Facebook, Rise Up Sea Red. On Twitter, again, Rise Up Sea Red. And also featured on our two lovely websites at CardsWire.com, USA Today's NFL Wire site for the Arizona Cardinals, and Seth's RevengeOfTheBirds.com for SB Nation. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root, and hopefully we're talking again in another week about a Cardinals win, and they're still in the playoffs.
Show your car keys to the bar staff this Christmas and get a free extra Coca-Cola Classic, Coca-Cola Zero Sugar, or Diet Coke. Because if you're the designated driver, when you buy a Coke, you can have another one on us as a thank you. For details, see coca-cola.co.uk/designated driver. Participating venues only. Have a happy and safe Christmas. Coca-Cola. Supporting Think. Don't drink and drive.